Dr. Annie Brewster understands the value of clinical detachment. As a doctor, she writes, I spend my days looking at radiology images and reading reports. But Brewster admits it's often hard to remember that the body part being referred to is actually part of a human being. And when she looks at MRI images of her own brain, it's even harder to remember that it's part of her. Brewster has been following what's happening to her brain since she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis back in 2001. Annie Brewster is an internist at Mass General, and she's been writing about her own experience with MS on WBUR's Common Health blog. Her latest entry is called Making Peace with My Abnormal Brain. And Annie Brewster, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So as you write, what you never want to hear from your radiologist is what you heard from yours. He said, I wouldn't mistake your brain for a normal brain, and that's because the MRI reveals the effects of your MS. But how did you respond to that idea?
One of the maybe dubious privileges of medicine, I think it's a privilege ultimately, is that we have connections to colleagues who can sometimes do us favors and look at our scans. So one thing I say in the article is that I always have access to my reports. Usually I see them even before my own neurologist does. And in this case, I'd asked a friend who's a radiologist to have a look at it and just give me his input on what he saw. And part of why I asked him is he's a brilliant radiologist, but also he's a very direct, sort of say it like it is person. Mm. And I value that. And he's funny. And he said to me, well, I wouldn't mistake it for a normal brain. And I loved his candidness, but at the same time, it penetrated more deeply than some of the clinical terms that sometimes are used to explain what's happening in my brain.
Yeah. And how did it penetrate? Because on the one hand, you understand it as a doctor, but as a person, there's almost a kind of defensiveness to that kind of judgment, right?
Sure. Of course there is. I think it penetrated ultimately in a way that I'm thankful for because it made it seem more accessible somehow or more real, or somehow my brain felt more connected to me in hearing it just in plain language like that. It's really hard to look at a computer screen and see an image of your brain and realize that it's your brain and that it's part of you. But in fact, I realized there's really not much more intimate than looking at your own brain because it's sort of what makes me me.
There's a sort of big central truth in what you write, and that is that your brain, the image of your brain, reminds you that life is transient and that we need to live in the moment. These sound like important bits of wisdom.
Yeah, I do think that in this day and age where we can learn so much from the amazing science that we have, whether it's getting our genome sequenced or seeing these high-resolution pictures of our brain. So one of the things I said, yes, it reminds us that life is impermanent because every year I get these very concrete reminders of how my brain part of me is changing. But, you know, on the outside, of course, we're changing all the time in ways that are more visible, whether it's our wrinkles or our gray hair. I think this reminder that I get, though it's hard sometimes, is actually a gift in a way to have it sort of thrown in my face. Yes, you're changing and in some ways, you're being diminished, but that's okay, and appreciate where you are and appreciate the moment.
That is sort of the nature of life and something that I guess we should all be coming to terms with, right?
Yeah, it is a lesson in self-acceptance, really, mm-hmm. because, you know, for me, again, it's about integration of illness into one's life, which is something that I'm very interested in. You know, I spent a lot of the early years of my diagnosis. I was diagnosed back in 2001. Really sort of rejecting that diseased part of myself and feeling shame about it and hiding it from people. And this latest piece was just where I am with that process right now, that trying to integrate every little last bit of me. And self-acceptance isn't the same as resignation. And that's a key point. I'm not saying I'm letting go of hope that there'll be treatments that will be beneficial and, you know, halt the disease and hopefully heal the disease. But at the same time, I have to accept where I am right now and love the whole me as I am today.
You've written really powerfully on Common Health about exploring these kinds of big questions as a doctor and as a patient. And I'm curious how being a patient diagnosed with MS has changed the way that you practice as a doctor.
Well, I think it's changed it a lot. I think one of the key points is that I am much more sensitive to the process. I keep going back to that word process, but I think learning about an illness, accepting a diagnosis, it really is a long process. It's never stagnant. It's continually shifting. I think as doctors, sometimes we can come in with a solution or what we think should be done. You know, people often go through a phase of denial or aren't ready to hear what we're telling them. They might reject our advice, and that's okay. I mean, it's my job to give that advice and suggestion, but I am much more sympathetic and understanding of where people are in their own journeys. And so that has really made me, I think, a better doctor. And it's also informed work that I've been doing on the side of my clinical practice, which is I launched a nonprofit organization a year ago called Health Story Collaborative, which has come out of the work I've been doing for years now, collecting patient stories. Mm-hmm. But the goal really there is to try and keep the patient voice alive in healthcare and to sort of bring the human being back, because I think a lot of what's happening in medicine now is, you know, with this time constraints and all of the focus on efficiency and scientific mastery, sometimes the person gets lost. And also to really honor stories and to use stories as a therapeutic tool. And hopefully it's helpful to others as well to hear it.
You know, I was really struck by another aspect of this piece, talking about your story, and that is you're a doctor, so you know a lot about your own condition and how MS is likely to progress. But you also acknowledge that as a person, when you study new images of your own brain, you say you hope that old lesions will somehow have disappeared, that the diagnosis was a mistake after all. It sounds like almost sort of magical thinking from a doctor.
Sure. Yeah, I do think there's power in magical thinking, and there's some room for it. And who knows, maybe if some of these newer medications that come out are able to remyelinate, which is what they're looking at now in science. You know, MS attacks the insulation of the nerve sheath, which is called myelin, which helps with conduction. Mm. And they are investigating new therapies that might be able to remyelinate or heal those lesions. So who knows? It's magical for now. But, you know, I think, again, that's part of my acceptance. I say that sort of a little bit tongue-in-cheek, that I hope that it's gone, disappeared. You know, I still hold on to that hope a little bit, but I know it's not a mistake, that it's truly what I have, but you never know. You got to hold on to hope in whatever way you can.
Well, that's Annie Brewster. She's a Boston internist and a regular contributor to WBUR's Common Health blog. She's also the founder and executive director of the nonprofit Health Story Collaborative, an organization collecting stories of illness and healing. And her latest Common Health piece is called Making Peace with My Abnormal Brain. You can find a link to it at radioboston.org. Annie Brewster, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.